we're close to being on schedule, and Mr. Miller and his team are here, so let's move to OMF.
Mayor, would you please swear on the witness? We're going to pin you down today, Mr. Director.
I want to make sure I got plenty of paper. Good morning. Fred Miller, Director of OMF, Office of Management and Finance. And I understand, as the ground rules go, I've got something like 20 minutes, and then there are like 40 minutes for questions. And I think that all of you in the council are familiar with the organization, but I probably worthwhile for the committee to get that piece of paper in hand, because it's going to help me walk through the variety of comments I want to make. Basically, OMF has four bureaus and some other functions like EBS, the SAP operation, public safety systems, revitalization programs, and then in my office we have a business operations team and a policy team. So this is a little bit different than some of the bureau presentations in that I'm sort of the hood ornament here to represent four different bureaus, and I'm going to fit them all together as we go through here. The resources and requirements you can get into if you'd like. I wasn't going to spend lots of time there, but it shows where funds come from and where they go. Inside, there's a brief explanation of the different bureaus and what they do, and then a rendition of our significant issues and some comments on budget development. I'm going to get into those. At the bottom of the third page, there's a listing of decision packages. I've got a little bit to add to that. And then on the last page, the performance measures. And I'm not going to be reading from that, but I'm going to be alluding to that as I go through and use my 20 minutes. The first thing I want to talk about is really our budget development process. And we have been trying to make sure that we are listening to customers and have some surveys out in terms of how we're doing. And I've asked all bureau directors if they can think of anything that OMF should be doing that we're not, so that we can either solve a problem or do something better. And in the budget process, we've said to different bureaus, we don't want to treat this like peanut butter, where we give a service to everyone. If somebody wants to buy more services of some kind, we want to be responsive if that's what the customer wants. So we have gone through some customer survey, customer discussion to get to some of our packages. And then we have our usual bunch of needs that surface as the bureau directors look at what they need for the next year. An example of the customer responsiveness, we have a facilities maintenance technician that's responsive to Paul Scarlett and BDS. They want some more maintenance in the facilities they have, and they essentially are buying that position. We've got a resource management position that is funded by either savings in our utility bills or by contributions from different bureaus because of what we'll be doing for them. And we've got a financial software package that is being funded by our customers. So those are really us being the representative of our customers and getting some things done that they would like. However, when we put together all the needs from our bureaus and those kinds of packages and went to our budget advisory committee, and later David Schaff, as a member of our committee, will make a few comments, I thought that our total package was exorbitant. And when I say exorbitant, it was, we had, for the maybe the best or the worst example, if we did everything that people wanted to do, it would have cost the police $1.5 million more for next year. And we felt like that wasn't the way we wanted to treat our customers, by having the huge bill, because we wanted to do what some had asked for. But we stepped back on a couple of different packages that I thought were good ones, but it was not timely. And two in particular that I'll mention were creating a sinking fund for fueling stations. There's a package there. And we're just going to be constructing the fueling stations, given the council decision on, eight new stations. We've got a lot of assets that don't have sinking funds that will be in worse shape than that. And we thought this may not be the year to create that fund, even though in the longer term that's a good idea. And in terms of whatever funds we have that represent reserves to replace our buildings, I think the industry standard is something like 3% we should be putting away. We're at something like 1.2, and we had an amount there. But again, that's going to cost our customers quite a bit. We decided at that time the budget picture was a little bit different, and we just decided not to go forward with those. So by the time we got through our budget advisory committee, we really had a pared down package, and I'm going to talk about those packages. But that, in terms of our process, that's where we got. I'll make a couple of comments about performance measures at the moment, and then we can get into that in more detail if you'd like. There are the key performance measures, which I'm happy to see CBO working on, but also we had a number of different things that were called performance measures in our budget documents that when I looked at, I thought they weren't. And there were something like 142 measures, many of which were activities and workload measures, but it didn't tell me what I wanted in terms of outcomes or performance. And this is still a work in progress, but we reduced from 142 to 67, and of the 67, 22 of them are new, because we're really trying to look at how do we really measure outcomes that we're responsible for. And then the key performance measures, some of those are not great. I mean, you can see them, but we don't have enough history, even if they're good measures. And some things like a bond rating, a AAA bond rating is something very important for how we handle financial activities, but you either have the AAA or you don't. And that's that. I don't know if that really gets to the spirit of where we want to ultimately head. But in any case, we did talk about performance measures and worked with the advisory committee. So decision packages is what I really want to focus on, because I think that's where the decisions are, and then you can guide where you'd like. And probably the elephant in the room, it's a little bigger elephant than when we put the budget together, is the Portland building. And we have a realignment package in our budget that was $3.75 million that was set aside for addressing leaks and seismic issues. And we, in our realignment package, suggest that those funds should be used for design of the reconstruction of the Portland building. And that's one that is before you already, and I think we discussed in the work session that was there. So that's an issue, but I've upped the ante some, given where the budget is and then the data that we've got on the Portland building. And that is a package that the CBO now has of $8.75 million, which represents a 5% of the $175 million cost for the reconstruction of the Portland building. We got those data in within the last week. And policy says that we'd like that you'd like to get 5% equity in an investment in an asset such as the Portland building. That would represent the 5%, and then the financing of that is yet to be determined. But there is, if the project is to take place, and I want to talk, it's going to get more interesting than that. If we do this, go through with the design sometime next spring, without specifying when, we would probably have to start moving some people out of the Portland building, not determined if it's all or most or some right now, out of the Portland building around a year from now. And if construction were to take place on a pretty aggressive schedule, we could have something done by, I think it's April 2018. And I do have a schedule. But in any case, there's lots of activity that would go on. So I wanted to get into this in a little bit of detail. And one of the interesting aspects of this is the space planning construction aspect. People need to be moved, I'm thinking of space there, into different areas, and we're taking some looks at what's available and what's possible. And we have a policy, the council has a policy, suggesting that we'd like to get city employees basically together in locations. We'll be moving people out in different directions in order to get the construction going on. But we have to think about, are we going to be true to that policy, or is that where we want to head? There are complications. Some people are looking for buildings in other areas to serve their customers, and it could be we need some small southeast Portland, northeast Portland building that takes, we're trying to do something with Fleet and Peabot, and maybe you could add something with water customer service, for example. There are other opportunities that we can think about. working at home to the extent that's technologically possible is something we may think about. But it gets complicated when we talk about moving people and whatever new building requests that other bureaus are making. So this would be a very active year as we start to try to do all of that. But that getting back to where we started, the key components are the 3.75 design, that's a realignment, but the 8.75, if you want to get this launched with an equity contribution. And if you didn't, we could still go through with the design and think of other ways to finance. And Ken Rust is thinking about different ways that we could finance the building, what that flow would be. But in any case, I wanted to start with that one because that's probably the biggest item that fits in this discussion.
Fred, the problem with that issue is we could spend the rest of your time on turning this into a work session to ask questions about, you know, at what point does a revised cost estimate change your grid and set of recommendations? What are the financing options? So I don't want to take up your time now because you've got a lot of other material to cover. Are you planning to come back to us at some point to have this conversation in light of the new cost estimates?
I think it would be a useful work session to do that because we do have some choices. I don't know my personal reaction after dealing with the advisory committee I had is that our best option is to reconstruct the Portland building. But perhaps you need to be convinced of that, but that's where I think it's going to end up in terms of looking at the costs and the alternatives. So I said to Marina Cresswell, who is doing the details, I said, try to bring this in at $118 million. And in fact, she did. But then you add the 20% contingencies and the permits and the money for art and so on, it got up to $175.
Fred, I'm really eager to see at least some initial ideas about financing. Because, I mean, for one thing, we do have new ongoing money this year. I don't know if we'll ever have that again in the next 5 years. And I think we should at least think about committing some of that new ongoing general fund to a Portland building plan. So seeing some sort of options, even if it's in preliminary form, before the mayor's proposed budget comes out, I think would be great.
We'd be happy to do that. That would be a good work session item because I think we could show you a flow of funds and what it would cost and different alternatives, but it's a big item, and I think it's something that we need to do. I mean, to go on and repair the seismic and the leak and not do something major is a problem. Spending $175 million is a problem. Okay, we'll do a work session whenever you'd like. That's there.
Even if we don't, I mean, work session might be hard to schedule just because of the flow. I would say an updated memo because you gave us that excellent spreadsheet before. Mm-hmm. I'm reading a book about the Getty Center in Los Angeles, and the original estimate for that building was $80 million, and the final construction tab came in at $500 million. So there were unforeseen things along the way. But I think that the way you presented it last time with the chart, I think if we just update the numbers and then have a discussion about financing, that would be helpful.
Okay.
And by the way, percent for the art kicks in on a renovation as well as a new construction?
I make that assumption because it was shown there, and
I should know as the arts commissioner, but I would like to know the answer to that.
Okay. But it was shown as a line item, so I assumed it was not gratuitous. But we can check if we... Okay, so that's item one that I wanted to talk about. I'm really working through decision packages and things of general interest. We have a position in there, and BTS, the data technology operation, had a variety of packages at our first go, and we eliminated most of those, had some realignments within. And as we get off the mainframe, that hopefully won't be off the mainframe, there are some like two positions involved, and we reassigned those to do some things that were needed within BTS rather than looking for new positions. But the one new position that's in there relates to data security emergency preparedness. It's a technology disaster planning analyst. We had a temporary spot there we tried to hire, and that's very difficult, evidently, to hire in that area, certainly for a temporary spot. And I think the CBO recommendation is, since we haven't hired someone, to go ahead and contract, which may be the best option from where we sit. But in the long run, I suspect we'll come back with that, because that's an ongoing function, and it's a position that I think, made it through the variety of things as number one in BTS. So I'm just alerting you that we're going to have to do something with that. And if it's contract right now, but I think you're probably going to see that position again. The other item that's big within the data security that you know something about is our PCI, payment card industry. And that's becoming bigger and more complex. We originally thought that we could accomplish something, and we are going to, and you have approved, a gateway that evidently is going to be clear in terms of how we use the sensitive data and not compromise it. And that's an okay solution for some people. For PBOT, that is something that we'll be using. But related to transactions, we have something like 9 to 10 million transactions. And because of parking meters, PBOT has 70% of those, 75%, something like that. So the I'm raising this not for our budget, because it's going to be paid for by the users, but it represents something like $700,000 or $800,000 to the Transportation Bureau that will cost. And I just plant that because that's a significant budget item, and I think it's of interest to Bureau of Transportation and to you. And I don't know the flexibility on that, and it may be parking meter revenues could be changed, but in any case, that's a big item. But I'm raising it not just because of that, because in our analysis of conforming to the PCI requirements, and then if we finally got all the rocks turned over and the analysis done, there's a very big job there. And if we're trying to fix all of our systems, including voice and where we take credit card information, I was told we needed something like 27 people and $1.7 million, so not all those being permanent, which didn't strike me as the right answer, because right now we're doing PCI 3.0, and it keeps changing, and we might be able to conform to 3.0, but next year it's going to be 3.1, and there are more stuff to do. So our conclusion, and we've had some meeting with our customer agencies, is that one way or another, we need everybody to get on a gateway that would be encrypted so that we would not be compromising the personal information. And the different bureaus that are looking at that could use the gateway that you have, but there may be better ways to do it. And I know there's a serious concern about customer service. If you get a call in a water bureau, for example, and they want to pay a bill and you say, just a minute, we need to forward you to someone else, or revenue. And I think revenue is concerned that once that you lose them, maybe they don't want to talk to you again if it has to do with paying money. So what I think, and I think BDS, revenue, water all need to think through what's the appropriate gateway, but there's the thought that we as an organization are probably not going to get into fixing all of our systems to be compliant and then find a little while later it's more money to be compliant. And I think it's going to be less expensive to go to an outside gateway. So I plant that partially to raise the transportation issue and to indicate you've taken care of, as a council, the gateway in one sense, but the other bureaus are trying to say, how do we minimize the impact on our customers? The next item that I wanted to mention, and it's under in our document under the heading of equity and opportunity, there were two decision packages. And one of them, we made the decision, and you would see this in the spring bump, the onboarding position that we had for 1 year, this current year we're in, has been very successful. We've got a program now for OMF on onboarding new employees, and we've shown the materials to other bureaus, and there's a component where they can plug in their own information. There's some things common to all. But it is a popular item, and it's gone well, and I've been involved with a lot of employees in that every new employee, we have a session where I get a chance to talk. And you can see that it is something that works well, and we want to continue. We did not come up with offsetting savings for that position, and you will see in the spring bump what we'd like to do is do some carryover of funds that we have through vacancy savings and is funded to fund it for next year. And that's coming a separate angle, but I wanted to mention it because it's in this package. So with that, we have a solution for that, but you obviously have to agree with the solution. But I think it's a good program and something we should continue. The other position in there relates to hiring disabled people. Anna would argue, and I could let her argue if you'd like, that we're not providing all the services that we'd like to and that the Disability Commission would like. But we don't have offsetting savings, so it is sitting there as one that we wouldn't fund now. We'd continue the services, but at a lower level than Anna would like and that I think Disability Commission would like. And I believe there is someone from the Disability Commission here that sometime in your 40 minutes you could hear from if you'd like to. There are three packages in here that are revenue-generating packages that I think are not controversial and don't need lots of discussion that CBO has would recommend it actually for two of them. One of them is the continuation of this IRS data exchange that got funded originally through innovation grants, and now we're asking for the next step, and it is going to be a revenue-raising issue, and I think it makes sense. And there's another one for auditing franchise agreements that is a revenue-raising issue that made sense to us and to CBO. There was an item that wasn't agreed to by CBO related to legal services. City attorney said because of all the work that's going on in the revenue division, there's a lot of legal talent that's needed, and there was a look for some funding there that I think wasn't approved. We're probably going to do what we need to, whether we have that or not, because it's something that we have to have in terms of some of those revenue measures. But I think the revenue-generating packages are not especially controversial. The last item I wanted to mention, and then we can go wherever you'd like, is the innovation program, which again isn't in our budget, but I wasn't here when the presentations were made to the council last week, but I find that one really successful in where we are right now. And we're still learning and moving with that, but you've seen examples of both the larger grants and the micro grants, and we've had close to 100 proposals coming in, and then many have been approved to do some things that I think are significant. And we're looking right now in the spring bump to do something with a carryover of the remainder of the funds that aren't used within the $1 million that is in that fund so that we could do another round of micro grants in May. So you're going to see that in a different venue, but I just put that pitch in for something not in our budget because I think the innovation program is doing some things that it should be doing. And that really gets me through the compilation of decision packages and gives you an exposure to what we're doing, and it's within about 1 minute of the 20 minutes.
Get from there. Questions?
I was curious. You mentioned using vacancy savings to, on which position was it again?
The onboarding. The onboarding position.
Which is like new employee orientation, is it?
Yes.
Okay.
It's training and orientation, but yes.
Okay. Are there other vacancy savings at your disposal?
I bet there are, but we spent some on a related to mentor-protege program and prime contractor training and sort of the MBE-WBE area because there's interest to do that better right now within procurement. I don't know that I've got anything. I can get you the answer to that, but we're not sitting on a pile of savings, but that we had that, and we thought this is an important enough position for us that this would be a way to handle it. And so it doesn't just take money out of HR to fund that, but reaches in other parts of OMF to make it work.
Yeah, I'd be curious in seeing it just across the entire agency since
It
is such a big agency and that a lot of flux going on. So I'd be curious to know that.
We can get that to you. I don't know if that's probably a better, we'll get back to you.
Yeah,
but we
that's
can
fine.
Do that. I'm sure someone's writing all this down, so I won't.
Just a simple question. How many full-time employees do you have?
If I said 650, I'd be close. Yeah.
Thank you.
So with a budget of about over 400 million, I'm surprised that there aren't any realignment packages or very many realignment packages, and also that you asked for a number of one-time funding positions, presumably so that you didn't have to provide an offset. So I and looking at all these positions, I don't have any proposed savings within the Bureau other than what you just mentioned with vacancy savings.
A number, I'll deal with the $400 million piece, but the number of the one-time positions, how many of those do we have? Three?
Two general fund.
Two general fund, okay. But let me deal with the $400 million because that's a big number. But if you look at the health fund, for example, that doesn't relate to positions. I mean, it relates to insurance. If you look at the risk fund, we've got some big funds there that we're carrying over that really aren't programmatic in the way we usually think of people and expenditures. So, we've got some reserve funding for buildings. For example, what we're pulling the $3.7 million out of to do the design, and those again is not something that I take those reserves and buy positions.
So that leads me to my next question. In your at the table, it says the contingency in this year's budget is $111 million, and in the requested is $144 million. What's that contingency for?
Good afternoon, good morning. Aaron Beck with the Office of Management and Finance Business. Aaron Beck, Business Operations. The contingency figure that you see there in the overall summary budget includes a number of the things that Fred talked about in terms of like replacement balances that we're carrying over, major maintenance project balances that we're carrying over. Because we collect money from the bureaus on an annual basis to fund these replacement and major maintenance programs, and we don't spend it all in one year, and so it carries over in our balance and shows up in that contingency account. And that's separate from the contingencies that we have for things like operating reserves. The other thing that we have in there that's a large dollar amount are actuarial reserves for our insurance funds.
So why is it jumping? Why is the requested budget jumping $33 million in the contingency line item?
I think I'll have to get back to you on that one. I'm not sure exactly.
There are so many different bureaus within this one bureau. I almost think that we should have another work session to look at it. And I'd be really interested to know about your budget advisory committee process. My personal interest is the Office for Community Technology, having previously been in charge of it when it was a standalone bureau. And I know that the bureau and its advisors have been, particularly the Mount Hood Regulatory Commission and others, have been looking at digital inclusion. And I'm wondering why there isn't a proposal to further that. I think there was an innovation grant funding that didn't get funded, but... Can you tell me how you arrived at which positions to put forward?
That one, in terms of the regular process, obviously didn't make the cut. It was an innovation funding proposal and didn't make the cut.
For the position, the ongoing position for the digital inclusion officer, how come that didn't make the cut of what you put forward?
I don't know what I don't have a great answer for that because I don't have all of them laid out and saying there's another expert. I've got him surrounded by experts. It's a long process, as you say, with lots of different bureaus and positions, and I can't remember what was at the cusp and not Thomas.
Good morning. I'm Thomas Lanham with the Revenue Division. I don't recall there being an ask.
Maybe it was just discussed to the commission then. It's kind of difficult for me to figure out all of these one-time requests. Can I look to the city budget office for guidance as to if these had been ongoing requests, would you have recommended differently?
may not understand the question.
Well, it looks to me that the OMF is requesting over $750,000 in one-time general fund resources to cover staffing positions that actually are ongoing rather than one-time. And I believe most of your analysis was this is not really a one-time request, if I might summarize.
I think that was part of it. It may not have been all of it. Jeremy, I don't know if you have.
I think that the largest portion of the positions, I think, are a smaller portion of that 750. So the biggest portion is that IRS data exchange program, which is the 550,000 of that. So I think of the two smaller ones, the training analyst, probably now we probably still want to find some savings within OMF, which is what they've come forward with. And then on the disabilities position, recruitment position, that's another one where I think when that resolution first came forward, it was stated that there wouldn't be an additional cost implementing this program. So we probably wouldn't change the recommendation on that one either.
Okay, thanks. So going to the data exchange, that's $540,500. And the Revenue Bureau received $295,000 in one-time funding from the Innovation Fund to fund the data exchange program. So now the request is for one-time funding, including an FTE, but it's really an ongoing need. So I'm wondering, why did you say yes to the one-time? And also, I'm concerned that the Innovation Fund was supposedly for making savings, and here we're now faced with because that was funded, we're now looking at $500,000 in ongoing.
It's another one of those. First of all, we'd probably want to see if the program actually did come forward with the revenues that they say they will come forward with. That's one of the things. I mean, a lot of these positions that start off in the Revenue Bureau, and Thomas might even want to come up and talk a little bit more about it. But these positions, when they come forward, we want to make sure that they're actually bringing in the revenues. So in the past, they brought forward a lot of auditor positions, a lot of delinquent collections positions. It's nice to have a year or two to see if these positions are bringing forth that revenue before we do make that an ongoing program.
So the Innovation Fund was kickstarting funding for this program. The $295,000 is spent out to get the program up and running. When the original innovation request was made, we signaled there was ongoing cost to this program. And so here we are talking about the ongoing cost. The reason it was put together as a one-time ask is that we want to make sure that the revenues prove out. I've got a very high degree of confidence that they will. We don't need to see much of a compliance increase to see substantial increases in general fund revenues. So I believe we'll be back here next year for a permitted ask, but we won't actually know what the revenues are until the back end of FY15-16.
And then my last question is about again, it's directed at the City Budget Office, about the OMF managed facilities and the major maintenance gap. And your recommendation is to consider interagency rate increases to close the funding gap. That's really asking the bureaus to fund this in. So it's asking the bureaus to take a cut, possibly in their own major maintenance capacity.
Well, with any of the internal service funds, they're all funded with interagencies between the bureaus. So what we have done in the past, and it's up to the council decision, is to backfill some of those general fund bureaus with an increase in general fund in order to pay for the increase in interagency rates. But as far as with the other funds, with the BES, water, PBOT, a lot of times they will have to absorb those within current rates or increase rates.
Yeah, and just to follow up, I think that is an important point, getting back to the infrastructure conversation we had to kick off, is that with this infrastructure gap and with the report that came to council last fall and the bump, solving this is going to require some of those trade-offs, and it's going to require some of those offsets. And so as Jeremy said, we can, to the extent there's general fund available and council wants to dedicate it, we can backfill some of those general fund expenses. But making serious progress against that backlog is going to require some realignment of existing programs.
Fred, can I do a quick lightning round with you on your dashboard?
Sure.
Because you have this is a pretty comprehensive and I think sophisticated set of benchmarks, and I just want to, I've got four I want to ask you just a lightning round questions on, starting with percentage of OMF-owned city facilities maintained in good condition. My first question is, why under your stewardship have we seen a one-third drop in the condition of our assets?
That's a great question, and the real thing there on footage is the Portland building.
Yeah, so, okay, that's the key change. Under the chart that has our our general obligation bond rating. Is that uniquely the CFO's responsibility to track that and monitor any concerns about changes in the market?
I don't know what to think in terms of uniquely the CFO's. I mean, it's in the CFO responsibility to look at that.
Who in the organization, if there's any looming threat to our bond rating, which is enormously important to being able to get cheap debt, who in the organization is most responsible for that?
CFO.
Okay. On the MWESB chart, very strong numbers. What we often get asked, however, is how does it break out in the different categories? For example, you know, PDC once upon a time, it was heavier on women and emerging small business than minorities. So for our purposes, is there a way to chart that so we can see the three subcategories?
Sure.
And then finally, on the percentage of PCI requirements satisfied for the city's electronic payment gateway, my recollection is that when the report came out within the last 6 months, some of the alleged deficiencies were technical in nature, but they get lumped in so that it you know, the message is we're falling short, but it might literally be paperwork compliance or some technical compliance. Of the 20% that you are identifying to get up to the 100%, to get from 81 to 100%, do you have a rough sense of how many of those are in the nature of sort of technical specifications and how many are the kind of substantive things that are going to require resources and attention?
I don't have the direct answer to that, except there's something like 280 different requirements, and if you fail on one, you fail on them all. So it doesn't matter if it's technical or substantive.
Right.
But having said that, the next point's slipping.
I didn't listen closely to you. I mean, I think the public concern here is not so much that you haven't checked the box or you haven't got a form in triplicate. Is the system, the integrity of the system, is there a sufficient firewall? Can they use the system knowing their information is not going to be compromised?
Well,
versus some of the more technical things you have to do, for which, as you pointed out, you get dinged, you're out of compliance if any one of them doesn't. What's your sense in terms of the ratio of things that are actually substantive and versus more procedural?
I grope with that, but what we found in that's where I was going to go before, and it slipped. And looking at what to fix all of this, needing 26 people and 1.7 million, basically said, if you touch this system anywhere, it's then in jeopardy. So if you have a telephone system over here and your computer system here is connected, that's a problem. And that's why we're getting into gateways to get us out of the business, really, of using this, the PCI information. Now, that's a pretty substantive thing. There may be some small technical things to get there, but if I were to say it's 80% this paper stuff and 20% technical, the technical things are big enough. We have to do them, I think, to be compliant. So it's a package that's important. And I could find someone to give you an answer on how many are small and how many are larger, but it's a pretty major change in how we do business.
And do we track somewhere the data on all the electronic payments then broken out by bureaus?
I bet we have that.
So we get a sense of where the biggest activity is and therefore potentially some of the biggest risk?
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, Madam Auditor, the membership. Commissioner Fish, yes, we have a payment gateway tracking system. We have about $158 million that we run through that payment gateway, and we have the distribution of all of our bureaus' applications that we can show.
Commissioner, if I could interject, one of the things my team at Xerox does is make sure that our websites are PCI compliant. And I can tell you that it is an ongoing battle as different web ciphers get hacked and cracked, and you know, we're audited monthly, and I think you very much want a specialist handling this and funneling everything through a centralized specialist rather than trying to deal with this on a dispersed basis.
Well, particularly where the city's in the process of encouraging people to use our electronic payment systems more, like monthly billing in the Water Bureau and signing up for that. We've got to be able to, with a straight face, say that it's a safe system.
Right. At Xerox, we consider this a brand risk, and we pay a lot of attention to it.
One more question on the dashboard. Maybe I misunderstand. Looking at the percentage of subcontract dollars awarded to minority women, emerging small businesses, et cetera, you've got a green arrow, but it seems to be going from 34% down to 22%.
I like that question because I asked that as I saw it. That didn't feel good to me. Evidently, and the answer I got, and I don't know if that's the final answer, is that there's some council policy to get, I think it's 22%. Last year, we got up to something like 35.
It's actually, the numbers are based on the actuals. So if you're looking at the first two columns, the 13, 14, it's the change in those actuals, not the change between what they've actually done and what they think they will be, which are the last three columns.
Right.
Those are the projections.
You're right to flag. It's going wrong direction. But when you compare 12, 13 to 13, 14, it went from 22 to 35. Right. Now, Fred may have additional information about targets, but that's specifically why that green arrow is there.
Okay, but you're hitting, I mean, the question I got was my question is if we got 35 last year, why do we try for 22 next year? That's not the direction. So I understand the green arrow answer, but the answer was, well, that's what the council has established as the goal. I don't know if that's the final answer or not, because I hate to go from 35 to 22, and maybe we can't do 35 year after year.
I have a big, vague question that maybe we'll need Ben back up for, which is, I have a working assumption that governments tend to underinvest in anything related to administration or infrastructure, and I also used to work for Cover Oregon. So I assume that there's some big IT disaster waiting around the corner. And so I just kind of like to get a sense of, are we wildly investing in IT, and do we expect that like some point in the next year and a half, none of our computers will turn on?
Question with some confidence.
He's really scared, yeah.
Members of the committee, I'm Ben Barry. I'm the Chief Technology Officer, City of Portland. Commissioner Novick, we are underinvesting in technology in the city. We have taken out over $10 million in our budget over the last 5-6 years in the Bureau of Technology Services. We've cut staff, about 38 staff. And so when we look at things like asking for a disaster recovery analyst, people might say, well, why can't you just handle that with your existing staff? Can't do that. The existing staff is already full up, especially with things like the payment card industry. And so when we have failures, it's a direct consequence of having underfunded IT, because we're constantly balancing the next best use of the money on behalf of our customers. And I think today, and I would ask Ralph to come up as well, I think we have about a $10 million underfund for our maintenance. Ralph, could you come up? That is spread across data center, networking, the infrastructure of the city.
But Ben, that's a good and loyal answer to the organization. But on a systems and platforms basis, we've been investing quite a bit. I mean, the ITAP system and BDS is just one example. So there are big investment gaps in things like the third floor and the ability to maintain that data after a seismic incident. But in terms of systems and platforms across the bureaus, my sense is that you're relatively current with the pace of available new tools.
Mr. Mayor, yes. If you look at point solutions for our investments, such as ITAP, or what we're doing with other key implementations like the public safety region application, those are right on in terms of the point solutions for a particular bureau. But what I'm referring to for Commissioner Novick's question is the fabric of IT that serves the whole city, where we could improve on that.
So what keeps you up at night? I mean, what could be the consequences of our underinvestment?
Well, the first thing that keeps me up at night today is PCI. You may remember me being on the cameras talking about PCI and becoming compliant by the end of this year.
Fred Miller talked about the investment of staff and treasure that has to go into PCI compliance. And we are literally pulling people away from other projects to be able to be compliant for the city. And so there's a difficult conversation that we have with our customers around what matters most to them in terms of things that we have to pull our staff off of to be able to become compliant. The other thing that really keeps me up at night is the cybersecurity threat overall, because we only have a certain number of cybersecurity analysts, but the bad people with malware are thousands around the world. And so we work on cybersecurity with due diligence as we can, but we're always trying to stay up in front of where the threats are coming. And there are numerous threats throughout the world. And so you witness the targets of the world. The other things you might hear on the news, having had breaches, that's the kind of thing that we are working diligently to protect. City has not had a breach on the size of what you see in the paper. But that's the kind of thing that keeps us up at night, as a whole bureau, not just the CTO.
And what level of investment we need in cybersecurity for you to sleep better?
Well, I think the first investment really is speaking to what Fred is speaking about around investments in the PCI. We've asked for staff around FTE. I think we asked for 2 staff in our cybersecurity that did not make our cut across all of OMF. But that was our key request for 2 additional cybersecurity people. And those are not in here.
That's actually what I wanted to ask about, which is there are several things, actually 5 listed in the PCI stuff is doesn't get its own bullet, but in their analysis that they identified as sort of very important to citywide priorities that didn't make it into decision packages for you guys. And their recommendation here is that there's a danger that these projects won't be funded and that, you know, because they're not in decision packages. Is it your intent, were these decision packages that were cut, or is it your intent that they might be decision packages that will be brought before council for review? Was this an offset issue, or? That's more a question for Fred.
The 2 that you're mentioning, if I have my history right, aren't those what we tried to handle through realignments from the positions that were made available by going off the mainframe?
Yes.
Because that originally was a package, and rather than trying to increase the charges to customers, we thought there's a way to reallocate, and I believe that's what happened with those.
The 5 that are listed are the Portland State University City of Portland Joint Building Project, the MWESB Compliance Monitoring Coordinated Campsite Cleanup, Facilities Resource Management Coordinator position, and the Data Disaster Recovery Site. So are those all the ones that you were talking about being covered through realignment? Because it didn't sound like it.
I'd have to go back through there in order. But let's take campsite cleanup. That's something that we started last year. And we attempted to fund that with OMF to get it going. And then this year we said to the various client agencies, because it's not really our program as much as people who own property, like water, transportation, parks, and so on, where the cleanup takes place. And we asked those agencies to if they would fund their share and got about halfway there. So that package basically made it to the mayor's office and said you can either allocate those funds from the agencies and make that an ongoing program or not, because we don't have the funding from the agencies, and I don't have the ability to say to parks or others, put the money in. The mayor's budget could do that.
So maybe this is a mechanics issue then. So if that were going to be a decision package, is the expectation that we would see it coming from the mayor's office then?
Yeah.
Okay.
We discussed yesterday where it fell below the line of what a bureau was able to recommend with an offset, but could still be selected for the mayor's proposal.
Do we want to hear from our budget advisory committee members? Okay.
It's your question. Thank you. on your KPMs, you're measuring percentage of facilities in good condition. Is accessibility a component of that, and how are we tracking the implementation of the transition plan within either the KPMs or KPIs, or how is that being tracked in OMF?
I think in our other performance measures, I could show you something. In these, I don't. In the key performance measures, I don't have that.
Okay. Is accessibility a component of a building in good condition, or the transition plan implementation and modifications a part of that as well, or?
I don't know, and I think it should be. I can't tell you in terms of the condition rating system how accessibility is handled. There's Bob, who could tell you.
Good morning. Bob Keita, Facility Services. The condition index report is something that is going to actually evaluate all the buildings, and the ADA transition plan is one of the components that is reviewed. And for example, the Portland building, whenever we have projects, ADA plan is consulted and all those things are included, so that we include the work of ADA in removing barriers as we do all projects.
So that's tracked throughout?
It's we're actually working with your office to develop a tracking procedure, yes.
Okay, thank you. And then the first one, in terms of using the BHR's focused outreach program, I'm guessing it's a new indicator, so therefore there's no previous. Where did the number 75% come from? Is there some guesstimate on the baseline of who does it now? And I thought that there was going to be a request for a position within the focused outreach program. Was that a bump, or did it not come through, or where?
Let's let Anna talk about that.
thank you. Anna Canwit, Director of the Bureau of Human Resources. Yes, we are still looking for a position to assist with a focused outreach. If the decision package is approved on the program specialist position to fully implement the resolution that the city become a model employer of persons with disabilities, one of the functions of that position would be to assist in focused outreach. Right now, I only have 0.75% of a position I can dedicate to that, and our goal is to have bureaus use that program well before we post, because by the time we post a recruitment, it's really late to start doing outreach to communities of color, disabled people, et cetera, et cetera. And so part of the function of that position would be to add needed capacity and also to reach a population we really haven't been very active in actually recruiting from, in part because, again, although initially I think the thinking was that resolution could be fully adopted without additional funding with budget cuts with an eye bureau, that's become increasingly clear that we cannot.
So if you meet the goal of 75%, do you have the capacity to really do that at this point?
Probably not, but I think it's certainly an aspiration, and one of the things, frankly, that we'll be using this measurement for is to go out in our work to market the program to bureaus, that it is important, this is why, and almost a cheerleader of we really want to get to the 75%.
Great. Thank you.
You want to ask that?
Since I'm here, one request. Travis Wall, who's with the Portland Commission on Disabilities, is here. I don't know if you'd like to hear from him on this package.
But we'd also like to hear from your BAC members that are here as well.
From
Travis as well, and your BAC members who are here.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners, others. Again, I'm Travis Wall, and I'm the Chair of the Employment Committee of the Portland Commission on Disabilities. And as many, if not all of you know, several years back, we brought a resolution forward to the city for the city to become a model employer of people with disabilities. There is a tremendous gap between what we are as a city, where roughly 15 to 18% of us are people with disabilities, and the city's workforce, which is roughly comprised of 2 to 4% of people with disabilities. And for a whole variety of reasons, including wanting the city to serve as a model to other employers in the region, the city being one of the largest employers in the area, as well as wanting to see the city live up to its responsibilities and the promise of the ADA, you adopted that resolution. I might share with you that in the process of adopting that resolution, you also adopted a white paper that we had developed in studying this issue over the preceding 2 years. And that, that white paper did indicate that that there might well be a need for additional staff to help carry this out, and specifically the position that we're talking about today. So it comes as no surprise to us, as we've worked with the Bureau of Human Resources and the Office of Equity and Human Rights over the past several years to bring this resolution forward, that we in fact do need staff to help carry this out. And while we very much appreciate the efforts of Bureau Director Anna Kenwit and Director Dante James, we need more. And I believe we've shared this in conversations we've had with a number of you over the past couple of years. So we wholeheartedly support this proposal and hope that you will take it up.
So can I just ask, the resolution that Council adopted, and I think it was mentioned earlier, the fiscal impact that went with that resolution said there would be no additional cost to the city. And I don't think the intent of that was to say there would be no additional effort. I think the intent was from Council, and maybe I'm reading into it, but their legislative intent would be funded within existing resources. Was that talked about at the time? And is this an issue of sort of prioritization within those existing resources?
Well, I guess I would say several things. I think one was is that there was a we were in a different economic environment when this resolution was brought forward, I think cold hard political facts were that in order to get the resolution forward, we agreed at that point that additional staff were not needed at that point. Again, I would point out that the white paper did specifically address this issue. The white paper was adopted as a part of the resolution. So we always anticipated that we would have to look at this. We kept our minds open, and we endeavored to work with the resources that were available at that point and the resources that we've had since then. But once again, there's a historical inequity here, a very significant one, and if we're going to address it meaningfully, it's going to require some effort. And again, that's something we have shared, as again I've said just moments ago, in conversations we've had with the mayor and with other commissioners. So this is not a surprise to us.
If I could augment that answer as the chief sponsor of that resolution, as Travis said, it was in hard times, and we wanted to get started. We didn't want to wait until the recovery to do this, and I really appreciate Anna and her staff having actually allocated resources to do what they've been able to do. Most programs, or many programs, as they develop, then need more staff, and it's become very obvious to me as we've implemented the equity initiative throughout the bureaus that indeed we do need more dedicated staff, because otherwise, if this is one on a long list of things that is a staff person's responsibility, it doesn't often rise to the top. And so I'll be supporting this particular ask, because I do think that having someone dedicated to this work is crucial.
So EAC folks,
we have David and Catherine. I bet they can finish in 4 minutes, because that would be the 1 hour we have.
Good morning. I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Portland Water Bureau. I'm one of the six non-OMF Bureau representatives of the OMF BAC, along with a couple members of your staff, and then labor and community members. And the six non-OMF bureaus are the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, Fire, Police, Housing, Bureau of Development Services, and Water. So we make up a very large portion of the customer base of OMF. There are just 2 points that I'd like to make today as a member of the OMF Budget Advisory Committee. The first is the Portland building needs to be renovated. The customer service bureaus have a need for employee workspace in a building that has both seismic and water intrusion problems addressed. I have employees who are handed out what we call windowsill cozies that are intended to soak up the water when the rain comes and reflect or dissipate the heat when it's a hot summer day. I have employees who, when their windows are leaking, are told, well, just don't use that part of your desk that the water's coming in on. That's a problem. I also need to make sure that not just the building survives long enough for everybody to get out, but we need to have a building that is able to do its job when the disaster is over and we're in post-recovery stage. And the Portland building is not that building right now. That's the first point. The second point, and Fred touched about this in his very first comment, I believe, the OMF budget development process included very robust customer input, and I worked on what was robust. Were we obnoxious? Were we loud?